Hi, kids. Do you like violence? Yes.
Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Fleet Comics podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
The Justice League of America, often known as the JLA, DC Comics' premier super team. It has taken many shapes, many forms, and we're going to be looking at one of those shapes and forms today in the form of the 1997, I believe it's 1997, relaunch of the Justice League of America from Grant Morrison, longtime comic writer. Before we talk more about Grant Morrison, before we talk more about the JLA, of course, I wouldn't be able to do this by myself. I could, but no one wants to hear this 90 minutes of me rambling about comics when I could do so with my trusted sidekick, the rambunctious, the rambling man himself, Rimzo Martinez. Rimzo, what is happening? Welcome back.
Assemble the league, bitches. And I'm glad we're doing this episode the same week as the Snyder Cut release. Talk about synergy.
Yes, indeed. Oh, yeah. I didn't even realize that was happening. See,
da,
accidental
na,
synergy. If you don't plan this energy, it's synchronicity, I believe.
There you go.
That's what I'm going to call it. So yeah, there's some synchronicity happening here because as Zack Snyder is relaunching his own vision of the Justice League film into a, is it a four-part or a six-part miniseries?
It's a four-hour-long single-run movie.
I thought they were doing it as a miniseries.
They were going to, and then they were just like, fuck it. Either watch it all or don't watch it all.
All right, psychos, here it is. Just take it.
We know what you want.
All right. Well, I know we discussed, you know, to peek behind the curtain, I'm on a little bit of a shorter time frame today as we record. So I said, let's keep the chit chat to a minimum. But that being said, what would this show be if it weren't with the chit chat? So how do you feel about the Snyder Cut going in? Are you excited for it? Have you seen enough Justice League of this iteration from DC from all of Zack Snyder's previous works from Man of Steel, Batman v Superman? Or are you actually excited for this as something new? I know you're going to watch it three times regardless.
Absolutely. You know, I've had like a 3 month long erection since they put out the previews at you know, DC's online thing way back in 2020. But I mean, here's the thing, whether you love Man of Steel, whether you love Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice and all that stuff, the thing is that this man had a really great vision and it was going to have a lot of fan service and a lot of stuff that would close a lot of the loopholes set in those films. And whether it's the best movie or not, it's 20 million times better than the shit that Whedon put out in theaters. And that's all I need to know.
It's hard to imagine it wouldn't be. I'm excited to see what he would have done with it, or like what his vision was. I just think the bigger problem with that set of films was, even if Zack Snyder did everything the way he wanted, I feel like the setup is not matching the payoff. Like the fact that Superman dies in his second film, I didn't feel like that was enough buildup. I didn't feel like there was enough buildup to the Batman Superman friendship before Superman's death. I mean, by that, I mean, they became friends with Martha. And then 5 minutes later, it's a traumatic death. Whereas earlier that day, Batman was trying to kill him.
Listen, man, that Martha scene, people shit on it, but I watched that
as
scene.
They should.
I watched that scene when I watched the whole director's cut version, the only version, the ultimate version of BVS DOJ.
That version is better, I will say that.
That version is better. And the Martha scene gets too much hate. But here's my thing. Mark, this movie's going to have a cameo from Chuck E. Cheese, Jesus Christ, Richard Nixon. It's going to have the Beatles come back. Buddy Holly is said to make an appearance, his ghost. I mean, this film is going to have everything or nothing. But in all seriousness, you know, the reasons why he left and what Whedon ended up doing with basically scrapping the film, as somebody who is a content creator, as somebody who I I will say I am an artist. I think that this man's vision should have at least been given its due. So whether it's the best thing ever or it completely sucks, because it could potentially really suck, I am happy that the fans were willing to literally burn down Warner Brothers in order to give Zack Snyder his due.
Yeah, I think like you, I think I like what it represents more than it even matters what actually comes out of it. The fact that this exists is really speaks to the power of fans, the power of hashtags, the power of fan service. And we really live in a day and age where if you get enough fans excited about it and start a movement, you can actually make almost anything come into life. You can conjure out of the ether whatever you want to see. And in this case, fans around the world wanted to see Zack Snyder's full vision of this film play out. And as much as the problems I think I had with the pacing and the issues that led up to, I think the bigger problem with Justice League was of course a portion of it is splitting the vision of two directors and Joss Whedon doing different things with it, but I think it was just the build up around the whole thing, and I don't think there's anything anybody could have done. I think it was at the, I'm not even blaming Zack Snyder, I'm blaming, you know, the executives. I think the way they laid out this set of films just wasn't setting it up to ever really have the impact that it should have. At the same time, I think Zack Snyder had, like, I think a 3 or 4 movie vision here, and I don't know if we're going to get beyond that. I mean, if the Snyder Cut is a success, maybe we will get a push for the Snyder Cut, too.
I read the script. So the script is released online. It was actually my brother Ryan who sent it to me over on Instagram, and he was like, you have to read this nonsense. And it was his basic outline of the script. And let's just say, listen, things have worked out. It's going to be awesome. Just be happy that you got it and don't look past it, because we've got a lot of awesome things coming out. I'm looking forward to Suicide Squad. I'm looking forward to Black Adam, which nobody really talks about. The Batman. There's a lot of great opportunities. And the fact that it's 2021 and we're still hung up on Justice League, it's like, okay, let's get this and just hope that the actual main canon stuff going forward is good at least.
It's an opportunity for us to all just finally move on from this movie that I don't think this controversy has gone away since the original version of this movie first came out. So either way, we can now say Snyder's version exists. It's out there. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. But at least it's there and we can all move on with our lives now.
Yeah. Princess Diana's going to be it. George Bush, a few dinosaurs, Winston Churchill.
Alf, I believe, makes an appearance.
OJ Simpson. Like, it's going to be great.
I can't wait. I truly can't wait. Even like you said, even if it sucks, I'm excited to watch it. That's how I'm viewing
my body is ready.
All right, well, that being said, we are going to look at now is not Zack Snyder's Justice League, but a Justice League from a gentleman by the name of Grant Morrison. This is the part of the show where I say, Remzo, what is your experience? What are your thoughts going into this on Grant Morrison?
Grant Morrison's Batman run and his subsequent run, I'm sorry, not his subsequent, but his later run at Batman and Robin were some of my favorite comics in high school. I think, like many of the authors that we've talked about recently, Alan Moore, Frank Miller, those types. He's an acquired taste, but ultimately my feelings are fond.
All right. Well, that being said, most of my I've liked Grant Morrison in bunches and bits here and there. But my biggest memory of Grant Morrison, it's been overtaken by reading Final Crisis and Multiversity, and those. They didn't make me dislike Grant Morrison. I still think he's a fine writer.
That was some. He's like DC's Jonathan Hickman.
Yeah, that is the exact way to put it.
Yes. Drawn out and often confusing. But if you want to pretend to be a smart comic book person, you say you like them, or else you are ostracized and made fun of.
If you want to see a comic book fan cram a reference to every comic he loved over the course of 20 or 30 years, then you'll love Grant Morrison. I'll put it that way. He is fan service to himself at all times, and often that fan service overlaps with actual other fans. So take that for what it will. But in this case, this was a relaunch of the Justice League in 1997, and prior to this, kind of throughout the 80s and 90s, really, the Justice League, the JLA, it took many iterations, but it was often, even though it is the quote-unquote premier DC super team, it was kind of often sort of a ragtag group of lesser-known characters, plus usually one stalwart. Like, they might have Superman and then a bunch of B and C listers, or they might have Batman and a bunch of C and D listers. But it, for a long time, never really had the big guns, and that was pretty much the emphasis behind this relaunch of the Justice League. This was bringing it back to being a true super team, to have all the names that you know from DC Comics all in one place, to have your Batman, your Superman, your Wonder Woman, your Flash, your Green Lantern, your Aquaman. And in this case, some would argue whether or not he belongs in this elite group or not. But the seventh member of this team is the Martian Manhunter, who is probably not as known in the mainstream. I think the first six I mentioned, almost every non-comic book fan will probably have heard of. Whereas, as I don't know if Marvin the Martian, if Martian Manhunter is quite on that level. But for any comics fans steeped in DC lore, he certainly is. What are your thoughts on Marvin? Why do I keep calling him Marvin? This is like issues and episodes.
You're showing your age, Mark.
I know, because I grew up with Marvin the Martian. Indubitably.
I'm a millennial, so of course my bread and butter was the Justice League animated series that came out in the early 2000s, and after that we had the oh-so-amazing Justice League Unlimited, which only stuck around for, I think, 2-3 seasons. With Martian Manhunter specifically, I feel like in the comics he's never really gotten his best shot, but he's really a character that a lot of people are able to kind of latch onto and say, wow, this guy has something to offer. We see it in video games. We see it in animation. And there's a reason why so many people were so disappointed when he was taken out of this Justice League. He was in Snyder's version, so we're going to get to see him on screen. We already know who will be playing him. We've already heard some of his voice in the trailers. So when he wasn't actually in the Whedon theatrical version, fans were a little bit pissed, but I will agree, in the comics specifically, especially JLA, he was always just kind of there. He's walking exposition, basically.
Indeed, walking exposition. He's like a shape-shifting version of the Watcher, or he's like Moira McTaggart. He can be whatever you need him to be in the moment.
I always thought he was like their Vision, but I think Red Tornado kind of took that too.
Fair enough. That's a reference right there, Red Tornado. He is one of the many like B and C listers that kind of came in and out of the Justice League over the years, as did, you know, about 70 or 80 other superheroes. But this story starts off in the present, of course, the present being 1997 when this came out. And I did actually buy this relaunch series as it was released, aging myself once again as a chippy 17-year-old. And at this point, I think I actually had like a job. I think I had like several jobs. So now I could actually spend some money on comics now. So I was buying a lot of stuff. This is like probably my prime because I got into fanhood when I was 13 or 14, but, you know, pretty much didn't have much money to spend on it. But now I was making, you know, I was making some bucks, man. I would go work at the Carvel, work a like six-hour shift at maybe $4 an hour. I'd walk out there with almost $30.
$4 an hour.
Oh, dude, this is like 1997.
That's like pre-9/11 money, my bad.
Yeah, this is 1997 minimum wage, man. And I got paid in cash. I wasn't complaining. To me, it was a ton of money. I was just like, you know how many comics I can buy with this? That's like 15 comics I can buy with my day's work. That was huge for me. And yeah, I guess you can tell I wasn't dating much of the time, because that is what I went to go spend the money on was comics. But we don't need to go there right now.
PSA for all the parents, get your kids addicted to comics and they'll never buy drugs.
Yes. Well, that didn't exactly work out. But
anywho.
But they might not see much action until, well, we don't need to go there. Anyway, yeah. The president, we're starting in the present with the president. The president is pissed off. The president is mad. He's annoyed. He has to go meet with El Presidente, he's calling him. So I guess it's the president of Mexico, kind of racist there. And he's pissed off because his superhuman escort is missing, who is apparently Firehawk. In 10 seconds or less, Remzo, what can you tell me about Firehawk?
Firehawk doesn't matter.
All right, thank you very much. Moving on. Firehawk, the president's being told, he pulled out of the position. He's no longer the president's personal bodyguard. Something happened. Firehawk got sick, lost his powers. I don't know. That is a quote. And keep that in mind, because we'll hear that. We'll hear things like this again in this book. But it turns out, as the president is flipping out because he has to go meet with the president of Mexico and probably just doesn't want to deal with that, a giant UFO appears over the White House as one of his aides says, there's something here you should see. And the president just says, yeah, will somebody call the Justice League? That would be great. Now it appears there is a version of the Justice League of sorts. I'm not even sure who these people are, except for Metamorpho. I'm not even sure who the other people are here. But I do know the character of Metamorpho. They're in some kind of other type of UFO, it appears, kind of monitoring the situation. When the big guy is on the case, they say, and the big guy, of course, is Superman. Of course. So Superman shows up right as these guys land, and there's these little eggs that come out, egg type things that come out of the main spaceship. I should have mentioned at the top, this art is by Howard Porter, by the way, who's a pretty decent artist, if you ask me. I didn't want him to get too buried in the headlines there. So Superman is there, just kind of telling everybody to calm down. Of course, everyone's got their guns out, and Superman, as always, is the voice of reason. He's like, hold on, let's just see what goes on here. And these guys emerge from these eggs, and they introduce themselves politely. He's the leader, who is he kind of looks like Superman with like a yellow Superman, basically, with like this kind of sun pendant around his neck. But I think he's supposed to be basically the Superman of this group. This is kind of a almost like a bizarro JLA in some ways. I don't think everyone is quite matched up with someone exactly, but you do have this guy who turns out to be named Zoom, Z-U-M. I don't know if he's German or what, but he's obviously the version of the Flash. There is some kind of female warrior type. Guess what? She's a version of Wonder Woman, etc., etc., so on and so forth. So these guys introduce themselves. They are Protex. This is some name, man. Protex and the Hyper Clan. This is also, I believe, a 70s disco group. But Protex and the Hyper Clan are here, and they have come to save the world. And they explain, you know, they were the last survivors of their planet, and they've just been patrolling the galaxy and just waiting to find a nice planet to help out. You know, just like any nice aliens whose planet has been destroyed would do. Apparently, they may have been traveling for up to a million years. So, these guys have been going around here. But Protex basically details their plan to save the world on live television here, while all the superheroes watch on. So we see the superheroes, like we see Green Lantern, who in this version of Green Lantern is Kyle Rayner. He's in New York. What do you know about the Kyle Rayner version of Green Lantern? Remzo, I'm going to toss a lot at you today.
Kyle Rayner is the fourth major Green Lantern from Earth, five if you count Alan Scott as the original. He came in after Hal Jordan was possessed by the yellow energy demon Parallax and went crazy and became a villain, ended up destroying the Justice League. Luckily, his ring specifically, went back to Earth and found young Kyle, who was a comic book artist, ironically, at the time, mm-hmm. who always wanted to be a hero. And Kyle is one of those characters that was brought in to bring more youth and diversity, and they nailed it. He's got a great personality. He's gone on to actually lead multiple major Justice League faction teams, such as the core with all the different lanterns and everything else, red lanterns, purple lanterns, all that jazz. Kyle is definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, I've always said Guy Gardner. I say it somewhat jokingly that Guy Gardner was my Green Lantern, because I always did enjoy the character of Guy Gardner. But
if I have to pick a favorite, my favorite is Jon Stewart. Honestly, I just like everyone but Hal Jordan. I'm not a Hal Jordan fan.
Yeah, Green Lantern is one of those characters that has many iterations where I actually kind of like them all. I think they're actually all relatively well done. I found the character of Hal Jordan, it got into weird directions with the Parallax stuff and everything like that. And then
it depends who writes him.
Yeah, it definitely depends who
writes
him.
I will say that, you know,
when it's
I
Jeff
like Johns, some...
I'm yeah. all in.
Oh, absolutely.
Indeed. We'll get into a lot of this stuff, later down the road in this podcast. We'll certainly be looking at everything involving Hal Jordan and Parallax, and we'll look at Zero Hour Crisis in Time. I'm very excited about that. We're going to look at the Green Lantern's return, I'm sure, at some point. We're going to be looking at all this stuff. So anything we mention on one episode and one little tidbit on the show is a potential and almost a definite future episode.
That's Easter eggs galore.
That's why you got to hit that subscribe button, my friends. You never want to miss anything. But Protex is laying out his whole plan. And like I said, you're seeing the heroes. You got the Flash in Keystone City. Now, the Flash here is Wally West, the one true Flash, if you ask me. Yes, I think we agree on that one.
Absolutely.
And now this is where, of course, I made a couple notes here. One, I said in capital angry letters, of course they speak English. It's just one thing that always bothers me with aliens, whether it's in comics or sci-fi or whatever. When the aliens just speak English, it just annoys me. It just always does. I don't know. I at least want some kind of like, oh, we've got this universal translator thing on, so now we can understand each other. At least tell me that or give me something. Don't just speak English. Why do you speak English? You've been traveling the galaxy. You just know our language. You know the one language on this planet. Do you know Chinese? Do you know Greek? Like, what? Anyway.
I wish the whole world just spoke American.
American. We'll teach you to read many languages throughout
one
the course
day.
Of this podcast. I'm excited. So yeah, we see all the heroes. And now, as Protex is laying his plan out here, you know, they're basically laying out all the good things they're going to do. We're going to house the homeless. We're going to, you know, feed the starving. We're here at your disposal. We have solutions. One thing that occurred to me, and especially because we reviewed this very recently, if you recall the storyline in Warren Ellis's Stormwatch, there's a character called the High, and he collects this team of basically an anti-Stormwatch team who each kind of have a counterpart from the Stormwatch, and they show up on the White House lawn, and they give a speech on television where they lay out their whole plan to terraform the Earth and feed the, you know, house the homeless, feed the everything, and it just struck me. I said, hold on here, these were released around a similar time. So I kind of did a little research, and I tried to figure out which of these came out first.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so let's see. And I'm not saying one copied the other. It's not like this is the most original idea, but they're so darn similar that it really got me thinking. Now that storyline in Stormwatch, the High first appeared and made that appearance and on the lawn, that actual scene, was in Stormwatch number 48, which was released in May of 1997. Okay, May of 1997. Now, this is JLA number 1, 1997 release date, and I believe that was released. Okay, JLA number 1.
Quick question. Stormwatch was at Wildstorm Studios, right?
Correct. That was Wildstorm, and I believe, let's see, I believe Wildstorm was purchased by DC. I think it was actually in 97 or 98.
It had to have been 98 because that's when Jim Lee sold off all the IP for that, I think.
Makes sense, because first there was Heroes Reborn with Jim Lee. So that was before that Wildstorm was sold to, yeah, it was in 1998 is when DC bought Wildstorm. So they were in separate companies, and this book was released first. So this JLA, if anything was copied, I suppose it's possible that Warren Ellis could have taken this scene or this concept or this idea from this version of JLA. And again, it's not the most original idea we've seen.
It all kind of sounds like Independence Day, Mars Attacks. Kinda.
Yeah. It's less that it's the overall concept. It's more this actual scene where he's on the White House lawn giving a speech about the whole thing as all the characters are seeing it on TV, and it's not panel for panel or word for word, but it feels pretty darn close. You have any theories here?
I'm gonna tie this one up to a coincidence. There are other cases of stuff like this being more intentional. Like, I really do think that Frank Miller, who, according to Rob Liefeld in the Robservations podcast, Miller was able to see Alan Moore's Watchmen script. So I believe that Miller changed some of the Dark Knight Returns to match more of what he saw in Watchmen. But for this one, I'm going to chalk it up to coincidence.
All right. I mean, I have no reason to make any accusations here. And these are both writers that I generally like and respect, so I will not make any accusations. But
if they would like to come on the program and fight each other, we would be willing to host.
Absolutely. I'd love to host.
I'll moderate that shit for free.
There actually is a bit of a Warren Ellis, Grant Morrison feud, I believe.
They don't like each other. It's Freddy versus Jason, as I brought up a few episodes ago. It's Freddy versus Jason.
It is indeed. So I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not sure when the feud started. You know, this was 97. I don't know. I'm wildly speculating here. I have no reason to believe that Warren Ellis is the type of writer that would even need to steal a concept or steal an idea. That being said, I don't know, man. Seems pretty darn similar. That's all I'm going to say about
suspicious.
I'll leave it there. I guess they're not just here to like talk about stuff. They're getting to action. So they spring right to action and they start terraforming the Earth, because what could go wrong there? They start turning deserts into like lush gardens and lush farms, and things seem to be going pretty well. But Superman is a little bit skeptical here. He's just saying, look, deserts can't just be fixed. There are causes and effects here. He's doing very much a Hayekian scene in the unseen here, if you get that reference. I know you do. And actually, it's not Hayek. It's Bastiat. Anyway, let's not get
the unintended consequences, children.
We're crossing the streams. We're crossing the streams, my friends. And Superman's thinking deeper than the surface level, though. He's saying, okay, yeah, some things look good here, but you can't just snap your fingers and have everything be perfect. There's ecosystems, there's things to consider. We don't know what the consequences are. And people in the crowd are like, oh, sounds like sour grapes, Superman. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. They're all giving him shit, because that's how fast these bastards turn on Superman. These aliens show up and they're immediately like, yeah, shut up, Superman. These guys are the hot new flashy heroes in town. But Protek stands up for him. He's like, hey, guy, you're being unfair to Superman. I totally understand his reservations. Happy to have a chat with him. Happy to sit down, have a little talk about this, so we can all go about fixing the world together. But we quickly see that the methods that the Hyperclan use are a little more brutal than you might see from, let's say, Superman or the Justice League or any hero. We see this guy. I'm not sure who this guy is. They don't name him. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but some villain. Yeah, some generic villain is tied up. No one they needed to use in any storylines, because he's immediately murdered and sentenced to death by the Hyperclan. They have passed judgment upon this villain here, and they're broadcasting this live on TV. We also see some narration that, following the dramatic executions, the Joker, Dr. Polaris, and a number of other prominent underworld figures are reputedly in hiding. So, and it says metacrimes, those involving metahumans, have dropped a massive 60%. So the mainstream media here, the corrupt mainstream media, seems to be getting on board with the Hyperclan immediately. They're broadcasting their executions, and they're giving the world all this good news that, crime is down, the supervillains are going into hiding. So that all seems to be good. Let's not worry if they happen to be, murdering a few people on the side. No big deal. What are you feeling about the Hyperclan so far?
I'm with Superman on this one. They come here. They're changing our deserts. They're changing our way of life. I don't trust these aliens.
Who knows what they're going to do?
Space wall.
We go up to... this is not yet the Watch Tower. No. They are in some kind of space satellite. Wonder Woman and Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner, have joined Metamorpho, kind of overseeing the happenings on the Earth here. And, they really make a point to show that Kyle, they emphasize that Kyle is still pretty new to this whole superhero thing, and he kind of references that he doesn't quite feel at home here. He's
been around for 36 years and he's still figuring it out.
It's like he's playing with the Beatles. Kyle Rayner? No, I thought he didn't come out until like the 90s.
Well, I thought he was like 88, 89. I could be wrong.
I think he's earlier mid-90s here. So I think this
I'll take your word for it.
I think this sort of makes sense based on how comics are paced. Anyway, close enough. As close as we can do with time here. The Hyperclan then attacks this station, or at least it seems that they do, and the shit is on. There's been a hull breach, and there's all these, I guess it's the Hyperclan. They don't know this at the time, but there's these kind of like robot type things that are coming out and attacking the station. At the same time, the station's kind of getting taken out here, and in the end, Metamorpho is able to save everyone, because his power is changing the elemental structure of his body in any way he so chooses. So he basically forms a giant bubble around them, and he provides oxygen to Wonder Woman and Kyle on the way down, and these other couple random heroes, these random C-list heroes that I can't even name right now. He basically saves everybody's life, and appears to the phrase they use is that he's inert. He appears to have gone inert. So a heroic act by Metamorpho, as the JLA is being taken down here. Then we see that the Hyperclan Protex here is in the Antarctic, and they are raising a city. It appears out of the ground, or they're forming this city. It's not exactly clear where it's coming from, but they have created a city somehow. It looks like they're actually creating it with their I beams. Somehow, I guess. And he says, "Behold the glory of Za'an Z'or." Now, did this tick any clues off to you as to what might be going on here with these aliens, just by the name of this city, without giving anything away, of course?
Sounds kind of invasion-y.
And well, we'll get to it. I don't want to spoil the storyline, but the name pretty much gave the direction things were going to me away. Anyway, yeah, like I said, Metamorpho is inert. Also, the now we have the JLA kind of assessing the situation. Flash and Superman have joined them. Martian Manhunter is there as well. And that basically they're all talking. And then they're like, "Man, we're still waiting for Batman here. Aquaman hasn't responded. He doesn't want to be involved. We're still waiting for Batman." And you just see him say, "Oh, I'm here." And then he's up in the rafters. He's just like, "Yeah, I've been here for an hour. I didn't think I'd make it, but Gotham's been pretty quiet." So I love how Batman has just been there the whole time. It's little things like this I do enjoy from Grant Morrison here. Little character bits that you see, whether it's Kyle Rayner sort of expressing that he feels really, you know, almost overwhelmed that he's here with all these heroes, these people that he grew up idolizing and drawing. He's actually getting to hang out with them. He's getting to play with the Beatles, basically, as he said. And then we get this characterization from Batman where he's just being a freaking creeper up in the rafters here. And Batman just declares, he basically just says, "Yeah, now my suggestion is this. We make plans, we move fast, and we hit hard. This is war." He's saying, like, this is a planned invasion, like, idiots. Like, can't you see this coming a mile away, just like all the readers probably did? So he's like, "Yeah, this is on. We got to do this thing." So what are you thinking so far?
I know their mother's names aren't Martha, but, you know, what I will say about Morrison is that he gets what ensemble books are supposed to be. Ensemble books are supposed to show the super stereotype that we all have for all of these heroes, but in a way that we get to see them really interact with each other. So while the story might not always be what you want, the real reason why I think we go for ensemble books is because we want to see the team up. We want to see the banter. We want to see the dialogue, because this is where the real juiciness kind of comes through. And I think he does that great.
Yep, indeed. So we now move on to issue number 2, JLA number 2. This one's called The Day the Earth Stood Still. And now we see that these domed cities are appearing on different parts of the Earth. So I think there's 3 of them in total, the big one being that one there in the Antarctic. Well, I don't know if it's bigger, but there's also one that I think appears in the Sahara, a domed city that appears in the Sahara, and then there's another one that appears in the middle of the ocean. Martian Manhunter kind of seems to be the de facto leader here, and he's splitting up the team into 3 different units. You know where else they split the team up into 3 different units? You remember anything else? Any other place where they did that? Maybe in that Stormwatch book that we read, it also revealed too.
This is looking oddly familiar.
But I don't know, because what's funny about that, now, when Warren Ellis put the Stormwatch team into 3 units, that was before this came out, because his run started in 96, and that was right at the beginning of that run, whereas this is this is in January 97. So I don't know, again.
But you gotta write and draw and do a lot of this stuff well in advance, especially when you're launching a series, because they want to give you like a 3-4 month gap, so that way you can get out the next month's issues.
It's probably all coincidence. It probably is. I just find it pretty funny that 2 well-known writers who happen to not like each other at all happen to have relaunched superhero team books at around the exact same time and happen to have some similarities throughout their stories. I just find it interesting, but it's probably all coincidence, right?
Now I'm suspicious.
I don't know. I don't know. I have no reason to believe it. But anyway, yeah.
Starting shit. Causing fights.
If they weren't feuding before, they're going to be feuding by the time I'm done with them. Maybe they never realized this till now. Maybe
Morrison
maybe,
v. Ellis.
Maybe when both of them are independently listening to this podcast, as I'm sure they'll do, they will say, "Wait a minute, did he steal that from me?
That bastard."
I mean, splitting a superhero team up into 3 groups for a mission is certainly not a unique concept, nor are aliens coming pretending they're doing good when they're not. So it could be coincidental that they both inserted these elements that have been in many stories throughout the years into their own stories here. But still. It's interesting. I'll let the fans decide, as always. But yeah, Manhunter splits up splits everybody into 3 different teams. And my note here is just that Kyle was sad that he's not going with Team Wonder Woman because she's hot. So he's upset that he's not going along with her. And basically they are going, each team is going to go to one of these stations and basically just check it out and see what's going to happen. So first off, Team Wonder Woman shows up. I think they are, Team Wonder Woman is Wonder Woman and... Actually, it's just Wonder Woman right now. But she is going to the one in the ocean, and this one guy she's battling a Fluxus, who appears that he can change his shape because it seems that he turns into a whale, and this is what brings out Aquaman. Because you
what
can't
was it the 90s and shapeshifting?
It was a big thing. It was a really big thing. It's basically your catch-all. If you got shapeshifters, you can do just about anything you want in the story. And then I actually wrote a one-armed Eric Larson Aquaman shows up. Now, I don't know if you're aware, it was a very brief run, but Eric Larson actually took over the Aquaman book at one point in around this time.
The best Aquaman run, at least in my opinion. You give him that hook arm. That's some cool shit.
I love it. I love this version of Aquaman visually. I love Eric Larson's little run on Aquaman. In fact, now that I have thought of it again, I'm going to try to go back in and read that run.
That run justifies the casting of Jason Momoa.
Yeah,
and that's somebody
so.
Who looks like from the 70s Aquaman cartoon.
Yep. Totally, totally. So that's one Aquaman run to check out. If you're going to check out Aquaman, I'd recommend probably two specific runs. I would recommend Eric Larson's run from whenever it was, 96, 97, somewhere around there, and also Geoff Johns' Aquaman Rebirth. Those are the two I would recommend.
And just to throw it out there real fast, Justice League Volume 2, Throne of Atlantis.
Ah, yep.
My personal favorite Aquaman story.
Yep, indeed. So all that. There's your Aquaman homework, Aquaman friends. Aquaman shows up, but he says, you know, he wants nothing to do with the Justice League still. When she's like, well, you know, too bad. You know, this is going to affect you no matter what. So you can say you don't want to be in the Justice League. It's just like, you know, it's like, oh, I don't care about politics. All right, well, they're still going to come get your paycheck. So it doesn't really matter if you care or not. You're going to care, because especially you're going to care when a city appears in the ocean like this.
You say you're not coming into work, but you're coming into work.
Yeah, so they're there, and eventually, let's see, Wonder Woman gets trapped by, I believe this character's name is Tronix, and it turns out like all the all Aquaman's little dolphins there, they're saying, oh, it's not a whale, not a whale, not a whale. That's because the whale was that Fluxus character who had turned into the whale. So Fluxus turns out returns from a whale into his own form, and yeah, basically they take out Wonder Woman and Aquaman here. So to the first team, not looking so hot, didn't do too well here. Meanwhile, Flash and Green Lantern are teamed up. I always found Flash and Green Lantern to be very natural allies in various iterations, but I particularly enjoy the Kyle Rayner Wally West team up. What do you think?
That's my favorite. I mean, so my favorite in the comics are typically Wally West and Hal Jordan, but Wally and Kyle. I'm sorry, no, I actually take that back. It's Barry and Hare. It's Barry and Hare. It's Barry Allen and Hal Jordan and Wally West and Kyle Rayner.
Again, Flash and Green Lantern are battling another group of these aliens here, these Hyper Clan. And the short of it is they get their ass handed to them pretty damn thoroughly. Meanwhile, we take a little break to see that Martian Manhunter is secretly meeting with Protex, and Protex basically offers them. He says, "Hey, look, why don't you do this, Martian Manhunter? You know what we're up to. You know what's going on. You know who we really are. So why don't you just show us your true form and join us?" So who knows what's going on there? But they seem to know something about Martian Manhunter, and Martian Manhunter seems to know something about them. And it's implied that there might be some shenanigans going on with Martian Manhunter in the background there. Then let's see, Superman and Batman are a team because why, Remzo? Because they are the world's finest. That's right.
And their moms both names are Martha.
Because their moms are both named Martha, so therefore they're best friends. Because that's how it works. That's how because Zack Snyder.
Why'd you say that name? Martha, why did you say Martha?
Anyway, I've come to enjoy it because it's so absurd. So now it's come full circle for me. I hated it, and now I love it.
I love the Godzilla so meme where it's like, you were never even you were never a monster. You were never a king. And next thing you know, King Kong on the ground is like, save Mothra. And Godzilla's like, why'd you say that name?
That's too good.
Random tangent.
I am looking forward to that new Godzilla movie as well. Anyway, moving along here. where was I? So Superman and Batman, this is the team that you think, you know, you think these guys are going to have this thing together between Supes and Bats here. But Protex shows up, and guess what? He's got kryptonite. That is no good, and that is not going to work out too well for Superman. So Superman gets taken out by this kryptonite, and they also seem to send Batman into a plane crash here. And of course, as villains do, they simply assume Batman died in the plane crash and don't bother to go look for the body. So
bad assumption.
Figure, yeah,
not a smart move, Cotton.
Yeah, so issue two ends here with the Hyper Clan seemingly winning the day. What do you think about the complete domination of the JLA by the Hyper Clan?
One, where was this team during the death of Superman? Was everyone just hanging around? Because that team got their asses kicked pretty easily.
That is the team that needed to be around. That should have come out when they're battling Doomsday. Instead, they're sending, you know, Firestorm and Bloodstorm and every storm that they have.
Booster
every
Gold.
Booster Gold.
Blue Beetle.
Yeah. Guy Gardner, Green Lantern, with all due respect, they weren't sending their best. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but in this case, these guys didn't just randomly find Earth. And yeah, they may have been flying around for millions of years potentially, but they've been doing some homework on the league because they knew how to get each of them. But to you know, assume Batman is dead. Bad assumption.
Always a bad assumption, essentially, even when he gets zapped by Darkseid's Omega rays and appears dead, but maybe he's actually living in the past. And yes, thank you, Grant Morrison. Because Grant Morrison, I'm excited to get into some of Grant Morrison's really weird stuff because, yeah, he's like Hickman to me, actually. It really is an apt analogy because I do like Hickman as a writer, but reading his stuff makes you want to pull my hair out. And yet, I can't get away. I can't escape. So he's doing something right because I can't stop talking about his stuff. And I'm always intrigued by where he's going to go with things.
It's like that scene. It's like that scene in Brokeback Mountain. I just don't know how to quit you.
Exactly. You can never accuse just like
somebody
Jonathan Hickman.
Please make a Brokeback Mountain meme with Mark and Jonathan Hickman, please.
I'm sure Prime Meyer is going to be on this within.
Please.
He'll probably finish this before the actual episode releases.
But
between the early release and the public release of this episode, I predict we will get a meme of this sorts. If I know my fans,
that's all I want in life right now.
Yep. All right. Well, moving into issue three here. Issue three. What was I saying? Something about issue three. Let me start this sentence over. I'm going to do a little clap real quick. All right, moving into issue three here. Surprise, surprise, Batman's not dead, guys. I hate to spoil this one for you if you spent those few moments between issue two and three thinking so, but Batman is not dead. He is kind of just watching over things as they've captured Superman, and Batman has basically broken into this Zaan's, or as they're calling this city. We then see Flash versus Zoom. I guess they took out. I guess they hadn't finished taking out Kyle and Flash in the last episode, so they're still going at it. Flash is basically racing against Zoom, and Flash does some Flash things and cites a Flash effect and beats Zoom. So he does a very Flashy-esque thing where he does something where he basically projects himself. He goes so fast that he projects a version of himself faster than himself, but actually ends up going around the world and is actually behind Zoom, but Zoom still sees him in front of him because something about the speed of light, something about the Flash, and he defeats Zoom. So that's a very flashy way to defeat someone.
I almost feel like, and I promise not to go off a tangent on this, I think the Flash became more popular when we could actually see him on TV, and I'll even include animation. Because to draw the Flash in a way that actually makes him seem formidable in the comics, the only person I know who has ever really been able to pull that off was George Perez. Otherwise, other people can kind of get it right, but I think super speed is a really hard thing to get really right.
Yeah. I think it's done. I don't know. It's done as well as it's like time travel. It's always kind of confusing when
or like telepathy or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the end of the day, the Flash does all this just so he can get behind Zoom and punch him right in the face. And we get a little, he says his narration here. I'm sure he felt that. Wonder how fast he's traveling. At least 7 miles per second. And you see Zoom shooting all the way like out of the earth and then all the way back down. He says, that's escape velocity, by the way. Flash fact. So we got a little Flash fact. I love Flash facts. Not going to lie. I'm always a sucker for a good Flash fact. Let's see. Moving along, Flash is investigating, and it seems that these guys are actually hiding in hyperspace. I'm not sure what that means, but that's apparently why they're not able to. Oh, I missed a good line that I really liked during the battle too. From Kyle Rayner, he says basically that he's a manga nut with a power ring, which I kind of like because he's like, you just ran into a manga nut with a power ring, and he creates this kind of a manga-esque robot creature to battle this other robot creature who I think is named Armek in the battle there. Flash and Green Lantern end up defeating their foes, actually, unlike the rest of the Justice League. And they're able to get in, and they see that Superman is about to be tried and executed. This is where Flash says, oh yeah, these bastards are hiding in hyperspace, whatever that means, because comics. We then find out that apparently the Martian Manhunter has betrayed them. At least that's what we're being told. And Superman is about to be put into this torture device. What is this torture device called? It had a really weird name, but I can't.
It's the thing. The thing, man. The thing.
Anyway, it looks crazy. It's this huge device. The entire Justice League is actually in this device now. They ended up capturing Green Lantern and Flash once they sort of broke their way in. Basically, Flash was able to get them in through something about vibrating through hypertime or hyperspace, and then they were able to get into the facility. But they were quickly captured and put into this torture device. So basically, they've got the whole league ready to go. Manhunter has betrayed them. They captured everybody else. Batman is presumed dead, and just about as they're about to put everybody into this device, suddenly the drones are all being shut down, all of their drones, and they're saying, wait, who could it be? Who do you think it is? Of course it's Batman. Of course Batman's alive. Batman is there, and they find this one, their one buddy, Immortal. They just find him hanging with a note that says, I know your secret. Eventually here, they do corner Batman, and he basically just tells them, like, I know who you are. I know that he knows that they are Martians. And he strikes a match and surrounds, he's basically surrounded by three of these guys. It looks like how's Batman going to get out of this one? But he strikes a match, lights it on fire, and he had actually basically lured them into a circle of fire. And if you know anything about Martians in the DC universe, yes, they can shapeshift, but they are also prone to their weakness is fire. It's basically their kryptonite. Fire will kill a Martian. So he lights this puppy up, and see you later, Martian. So Batman, of all people, of all these characters, all these heroes have all these powers, and at the end of the day, it's Batman who's smart enough to figure out who they are and smart enough to find their weakness. But of course, at the end of the episode, at the end of the issue, we learn that Hyperclan here, these guys, this is just the first front. There's 70 more of these bastards on the way, and Earth is pretty much fucked. So what do you think about issue 3 here? What do you think about the Justice League basically getting their asses handed to them, except for the intellect of Batman that is able to have him actually take out 4 of these dudes?
It's pretty basic storytelling. You see this in comics and in film, but the best way to go ahead and really raise the stakes is to beat the entire team of protagonists. That's kind of expected. And while that kind of comes to a point where it's kind of a little gimmicky, predictable, Batman just coming back makes it almost justifiable, because it's a little bit funny. It's a little bit badass at the same time. It's like, okay, I didn't really need to see this. I know I can assume how things are going to end, but it's cool I saw it anyway.
Then we go into issue 4 here. This one's called Invaders from Mars. It's all out in the open. We all, at least the reader and the JLA, they all know that these are, in fact, Martians that have come to invade the Earth. And I really like, we hear Superman Superman's narration here. And I'm just going to read this for a bit here. It says, mind control, sick superheroes. Why hasn't the kryptonite killed me yet? Fire got sick. Firehawk got sick. Dr. Phosphorus, too. So they've referenced this a couple times throughout in the dialogue, too, that there's random heroes that have been getting sick, losing their powers, and that sort of thing. It says, what if the Hyper Clan planned it all? Who would possess those powers, use mind control techniques, and fear fire? So now Superman is also figuring it out here. He's like, oh, wait, it's Martians. So, you know, now Superman has independently figured this thing out. And he says, you know, the kryptonite makes, and at the same time we hear, it's kind of
juxtaposed.
It's juxtaposed.
We learn words here.
Yeah, it's juxtaposed. I am teaching you to read very slowly, and you're teaching me to speak. And it's juxtaposed with Protex's narration, where he says the kryptonite makes moving his head feel like dragging a planet from its orbit. Mind control, but kryptonite. What if it's not real? Wait, this is not Protex's thing. Wait a minute.
The other guy.
Is this all Superman's narration? Maybe it's all Superman's narration. But
I think it's his.
Yeah, but they're in two different colors. That's why I thought it was two different. Yeah, it is. It is. It's someone else.
We don't get the other guy's thought balloon, I think.
No. I know what's going on here. I think I understood this the first time, and now I don't understand it. But basically, they realize, what if there were no kryptonite? What if it's not real? Psychosomatic symptoms triggered by a telepathic implant. Alarm bells are ringing all over the world. He can hear them. And Superman basically breaks free here because he says, he knows, you're Martians. So I think this is... I don't actually understand the dialogue here. It's narration that it seems.
The voice doesn't sound like Superman, but it is Superman.
But there's two voices, and they seem to both be Superman? Yeah, anyway, both voices are figuring out that they're Martians at the end of the day, so they figured out they're Martians. Yeah, I'm not actually sure there. This is very confusing to me, now that I'm looking at it a second time.
You see this a lot in Final Crisis, where often... The voice of the character gets lost because Morrison wants to use it more as an expositional device, which is sad because when he does direct dialogue between characters, it's really good. I think Jeff Johns is sometimes guilty of the same thing. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this was not real kryptonite. It was a psychosomatic suggestion in Superman's mind to make him think it was real kryptonite. So he's not actually being affected by it, which means he's got his full powers. And this is when Protex says, oh, he knows. And then Superman busts out and goes, you're Martians. And he says, fire is the one thing that weakens them. So, of course, he tries to rain fire down upon. And now we have Protex battling with Superman. Now during this battle, there is this Armek character. He's like the robotic one. And let's see, we find out he begins to crumble away and transform and reform into Martian Manhunter. So Martian Manhunter had actually disguised himself as Armek. So we then find out that these guys that are here, basically the Martians that have arrived are the evil white Martians. We're going to get to the whole story in a minute, but ultimately, Superman helps everybody escape. Green Lantern, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Flash, they all show up to help Manhunter in this battle here. Aquaman is controlling, this is kind of a cool thing. Zoom is back up since his fight with the Flash, and Aquaman is battling Zoom. I like that the one thing here is that Aquaman says he's controlling his vasal ganglia inherited from his marine ancestors and gives him a seizure. That's a kind of a cool use of Aquaman's powers, where he can kind of telepathically communicate with marine life and sea life. Well, he finds this ancient, this ancient piece of Zoom and gives him a seizure with it. So I thought that was a pretty interesting use of Aquaman's powers.
Only there. Grant Morrison would want to go and figure that shit out.
Yeah, exactly. So let's see. So Wonder Woman is battling, there's some weird names of these characters here. Primate in space. And then we do get, we see a little bit of the battle here between the creepy white form of Protex turns into more of his Martian form and sort of envelops Superman. And we get some narration here where we learn like the real story of the Martians here. And basically a long time ago, these Martians tried to make a super race on Earth, but they messed up. They didn't do a good job, and all they got were these measly humans. So the humans are like the failed experiments of the Martians to these white Martians anyway, to try to create a super race.
The History Channel was right.
The History Channel presents. Yes. Yeah. And basically, Superman just ends up just flying Protex right into the ground. He then uses the problem is here, though, they're also been using these three cities have been using this sort of psychosomatic, this like psychic, I don't know, broadcast basically to manipulate people into
dark psychic energies.
Dark psychic energies into to manipulate people into basically a state of terror from these people. And, you know, he's like, now all these different Martians are about to rain hell on Earth. Like all the other Martians are showing up, and Superman just broadcasts to them. He's like, everybody, all right, you got to be calm. Calm down. I know things are crazy right now. We got things under control here. We're the Justice League. But the truth is, we're probably not going to be able to get to everybody at once. We need you guys. We need you to stand up and fight. And you need to just know they're afraid of fire. So he basically takes over their system. This is actually like a Wonder Woman, the Wonder Woman movie. He takes seizing control of the broadcast here. But he's basically using the broadcast to hype up everybody in the world.
Only and you get can make things right.
Yeah, he's giving them the Braveheart speech and inspiring them to take up fire of their own. And this is where you see people sort of like lifting up their lighters that they were going to use at their concerts. And this is before iPhones. And they lift up their lighters and basically they are all going to light their own fires and battle these Martians too. So now that they know to use fire, basically between the JLA taking down this small hyper clan group and the knowledge of the rest of the world that these are not heroes, these are actually Martians, and we can burn them with fire. Basically, the rest of the world gets to do the job for them, but it gets to do the job that the Justice League just didn't have the manpower to do all at once. So not only does the Justice League take down the villains here, but they also inspire the rest of the world to sort of be heroes for themselves, which is a lovely message.
I could just hear the Live Aid concert in the background, like, we are the world, fuck Martian up the aid. Martians.
And basically Martian Manor comes out and he says, I knew they were Martians the whole time, obviously, because I'm a Martian, but I hesitated to say anything right away because they're the last relic of my culture, and I'm sorry, I should have said something sooner. And of course all is forgiven with Superman because he's Superman, he can let stuff go pretty easily. But yeah, they basically too, they're also having this discussion, like, what is the role of heroes here? This is kind of how Grant Morrison wraps things up here, is like what should a hero be? Like, like, should we be using our power to do things like the Hyper Clan was doing? Even if they were bad guys, like, should we be going around and maybe turning deserts into gardens and this sort of thing? But at the end of the day, Supes basically says, humanity has to rise and fall on its own. And then I'm not sure who actually says that. They say, so, what's the purpose of the Justice League then? I think it's Flash here. Yeah, he says, all right, well, fine, but then what's the point? Why do they need us at all? And that's when Superman just says to catch them if they fall. Very, very Superman-esque thing to say.
I got chills. They're multiplying.
They are indeed multiplying. And on the last page here, well, not the very last page of the story, but the last page proper of this book, we see the new Watchtower, the Watchtower that would stick around for quite a number of years until right before Final Crisis when Superboy Prime will destroy it. Spoiler alert. I believe this Watchtower got 124 issues or so out of it. But this is what is known as the Watchtower and where the Justice League will operate from. Pretty much here on out, even when the Watchtower is destroyed, I think they just make a new one after that. So this is the debut of the Watchtower, though. This is the first time they actually had this building on the moon where they watch over the Earth. So it certainly has that historical significance to it.
Right before that, it was the Hall of Justice, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was right before this. Yeah, I mean, at some point earlier, it was like the Hall of Justice. Yeah, and then they showed Metamorpho in some like UFO in space watching before. So I don't know what the deal is there. I think they were mostly Earthbound though before.
Watchtower was always my favorite though.
Yeah, and now the idea being like, all right, they got a bunch of heroes on Earth, but you know, the JLA, we're going to be here for otherworldly threats. We're going to be here for the cosmic threats. So that's why we're going to be hanging out here on the moon, watching out for bad shit to go down. And we're going to have the badass, you know, superpowered heroes. Now, this will go in different directions later because, you know, in the next book, they actually kind of have the next cover really says so much about 90s comics. And we're not going to go into the next storyline of this one just yet. But the next cover of issue 5, let me name some of the characters on this cover for you. Steel. Remember Steel? Hitman, you remember Hitman? Or do you know Hitman?
It's been a while.
Plastic Man, I forget her name. Not Wonder Woman. Artemis. Artemis is the other one that's not Wonder Woman. We also have what looks to be, it looks like Green Arrow, but I'm not sure if it's really Green Arrow. It might be like the younger, it might be Arsenal. And then we have Electric Superman. Electric Blue Superman, Electric Superman 2, Electric Boogaloo. So things get wacky and weird after this, but what Grant Morrison was really doing here was establishing the core JLA and establishing that, like, no, this is not the B team, this is not the C team, this is the best heroes, the strongest heroes gathered in one place to deal with otherworldly threats, to deal with cosmic threats. That's basically what he's setting up with this Justice League. We also get a little bit of an epilogue here. There's this guy, Bob Gray. He seems to be having these weird dreams. Had a really bad night. He's seeing weird things in the mirror. And it says he will have these same dreams and then go to work just along with 69 other people. So basically they're telling us that much like this is kind of reminds me of, spoiler alert, if you have not seen WandaVision finale and you want to, just stop the podcast here. You're not going to miss much, but I will spoil something in 3, 2, 1. All right. At the end of WandaVision, Wanda punishes Agatha Harkness by, instead of killing her, she basically imprisons her in the personality of someone else. Basically, as the nosy neighbor character that she was trying to portray.
Agnes.
I'm not spoiling it for you, right?
No, I saw
you
it.
You did see it. Okay, good. She basically makes her into actually be Agnes, which is a character she was just kind of pretending to be. So basically, Agatha Harkness is trapped living the life as Agnes as her punishment, and that's basically what's happening to these 70 Martians here, because hey, they're heroes, they're not going to kill them. I don't know why they didn't just send them to Phantom Zone or something,
you know, but it's better than what like the Fantastic Four did to a bunch of Skrulls. They you know, mess with their minds and made them into cows. Do you remember that story?
I do remember that, actually. Yeah,
that is inhumane compared to what the Justice League did.
Yeah, at least they're humans.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's not too bad.
They can live lives, they could do their
Bob
own
Gray's
thing.
A firefighter, yeah, he gets some exercise. It's not so bad, considering the things that
they're trying to do. Think how many Skrulls got turned into burgers by accident.
Oh my God, that probably did happen.
Yeah.
Skrull burgers, yeah. Skrull milk. That should be a storyline where people end up like kids are born who are like, you know, they're raised on Skrull milk accidentally because they didn't know the Skrulls became cows, and then the kids start, you know, shapeshifting.
There was a small limited series that came out in the mid 2000s after Secret Invasion called the Skrull Kill Crew, where basically a bunch of these former Skrulls who love Earth go around killing all the Skrulls in hiding, and they go back to the cows from all the way back in like the 1960s Fantastic Four, and they have to end up like slaughtering all the cows, and as the cows see the other cows get killed, they begin to get like these PTSD memories of being Skrulls, so then they become super cows. It's lit. It's awesome.
That's
either
horrific.
Way, the Justice League, very diplomatic, humane, fair, classy, if I can say.
Yeah, as far as punishments go, well, I can think of worse.
Yeah.
Anywho, that does it for the first run here, the initial storyline of Grant Morrison's JLA run. This run of JLA would go on, I believe, all the way until issue. I think the last issue of this run is right before Infinite Crisis with the destruction of the Watchtower by Superboy Prime. Spoiler alert, if you were planning to read this whole run, that's what happens at the end. But that's it. So let's just dive right in, Remzo. What did you think of this little run, this little intro, this reintroduction to the Justice League, the JLA from Grant Morrison?
I have fond memories of this, and they're kind of reversed. So these four issues specifically inspired the first pilot episode of the Justice League animated series that would come out, and it also inspired the series finale, which was a 2-3-part event that where they changed out the Martians for the Thanagarians. So it got repurposed into two of my favorite Justice League animated series episodes. This is just really good. It's not the most original story, but what makes this a great ensemble book is that we get to see everybody shine. We get to see everybody interact. It's just a good read. It's just kind of flat though, but you know, based off my prior criteria, is this great for new readers? I'll give it an A. Is it great for old readers? I think it could have delivered a little bit more, especially for a series start, but it's okay. So I'll say for new readers, it's an A. For regular readers, probably a B minus, which is modest. The artwork though is very 90s. Looking back, it's like, you know, does this really stand out? I'll give it kind of a C. And does this age well? You kind of look at it and you're like, you couldn't really, like, your reader today is not really going to look at this and think this is anything monumental. All in all, I'm going to give the artwork a 3. It's good. It's not great. I could think of a few other artists around this time I think could have probably done it. For the story, I'm going to give it a 3.5 because while the plot itself is not the most, you know, amazing plot ever, I love how he writes these characters. I think this is actually some of his best stuff. And I did really love this Justice League run when they bring in, the crime syndicate from Earth 2 way later on. That's another great story. That's great too. So I'm going to give this for story a 3.5. So I'm giving it a 6.5. It might sound like I'm kind of lowballing it a bit, but I think, you know, a 6 or higher is definitely something that's a good weekend read.
Yeah, we're probably not going to be too far apart here at the end of the day. This is a run I did have pretty fond memories from, but when I compare it, I think I would most compare it around both in time frame and in purpose to the relaunching of the Avengers that we looked at just a few episodes ago after the Heroes Return storyline when they relaunched that book. And they did that with something like 59 characters or 70 characters or something. And yet somehow it worked. It worked just perfectly. I gave that a very high score. And comparing it to this, maybe that's not perfectly fair. But this didn't quite feel like it had the same impact for me. Whereas that really felt like a great jumping on point as well as a very rewarding for longtime fans. And I can't say this doesn't serve the same purpose. It does. It just doesn't have the same sort of impact to me. Like the story is good, not great. Like you said, I agree with you about Grant Morrison here. I think what shines in this writing more than anything else are the characters, the little tidbits about the characters, the little lines about the characters. He really goes out of his way to make them distinct and within the team dynamic. And that's why we see different interactions between different characters, how he pairs them off into teams that make sense. Wonder Woman and Aquaman, Flash and Green Lantern, Batman and Superman. I mean, those are three just perfect teams, and the dialogue we get to see between those teams really helps move things along and helps the story move along and helps us understand these characters better, helps establish those characters better and their relationships. So I really do like the writing in that sense of the dialogue. The story itself, though, I don't know. I just read this in Stormwatch. Even if I'm just not sure which came first. It's not really an original concept. To me, the Martian thing was just too obvious. Like, because in the first issue,
it was a little on the
nose. Yeah, it was a little too on the nose. Like, there was really no mystery there. Like, you see Za'an Za'or, John Jones, the way it's spelled, is the Martian Manhunter's name. So you kind of know, okay, there's something Martian here. It wasn't that much of a mystery, really, when you see Martian Manhunter meeting with Protex. Like, I already kind of was like, oh, yeah, it's because he's a Martian and he's probably doing some double-cross thing here, which, of course, he was. He's not really going to turn on the Justice League. So to me, there wasn't much suspense to this story. It was more just, how do they figure it out? And there wasn't that much to it. Just kind of like, oh, Batman survived the plane crash and he got in and figured it out. I mean, it's a very Batman way to save the day, having Batman be the one to use his brains, whereas everyone else's powers didn't save them. So I like that aspect of it. At the end of the day, let's see, I'm going to agree with you on the art. It's good, but not great. It's kind of a poor man's version of good 90s superhero art. It was a little disappointing. There's flashes of greatness with it. I think the covers are awesome. There's a couple of awesome splash pages.
The covers was what carried my score. really.
Absolutely.
Which might be a little unfair, but it's how I did it.
Yeah, the covers are better than the interiors by a lot, actually. I would say a lot of the interiors, there's a lot of it lacks a lot of detail. I'm never wowed by anything inside this book. It's just fine. So that's what gets to the three, and I'm gonna agree with you on the writing too. I'm gonna say it's a 3.5. Like I like the story, and what gets it to that 3.5 really is just the dialogue that we both enjoyed quite a bit. But the story itself was just nothing to write home about. Again, 6.5 is not a bad score. It's worth checking out. But I would never say, man, this is something you got to read. I wouldn't even necessarily say this is any kind of definitive Justice League. But like you said, decent weekend read, and it's not a bad introduction to the characters if you're not familiar with
launching point.
It's a soft launching point, and this series does go in some different directions, and maybe we'll dive into more of it later on. This might be something I kind of continue with on my own a little bit, and just kind of try to relive where it went, because I don't exactly remember where this all went. So I might try to dive into this a little more on my own, just to relive some things that I know I did read, but it's been a few years.
It's been a minute.
I'm not sure if you realize that it's been a minute. So yeah, 2 6.5s. I think it's been a while since we've had the exact same score on something, or did we do that last episode?
No, I think this is the first time in a while. So 13 out of 20. Hey, if you're at the comic book shop and you're just kind of wandering and you see this graphic novel, pick it up. It's a good addition to your collection.
Yeah. And if you got the Hoopla app, it's free on there. So, harmless read. I certainly wouldn't call it bad. It's definitely enjoyable. Just, nothing to write home about. I believe this run does get better. It's like you said, it's a soft reintroduction to the characters. It's not breaking any new ground here, but it's a perfectly acceptable reintroduction and relaunch.
Agreed.
All right. I think that's about it for us today. Any notes, any house notes we got to pass along here? Of course, as always, hey, if you're not doing anything tonight, why don't you have a little date? Why don't you pour yourself a glass of wine, bring out your Apple Podcast, pull up Second Print Comics, leave your boys a 5-star rating and a great review. That does wonders and wonders and wonders to help boost us in those algorithms, get us into more of those fanboy earbuds out there.
And do you think Mark and I's voices are just audible chocolate? Well, hey, you could go ahead and get more of us over on Patreon, patreon.com/secondprintpod. You can find the link in the show notes. Claire continues, WandaVision recaps, Remso rants, Remso versus the MCU Phase 1, and a whole ton of other fun.
The Random Marvel Comics Podcast, where I press a button on the Marvel app and I get a random issue of a random Marvel comic and I read it and randomly do a podcast about it. You can get all this on the Second Print Patreon.
So much content!
So much fun?
So much fun.
Oh, sounded like I was supposed to finish a catchphrase there. So.
Well, I'll go ahead and just remind people, in case you had temporary amnesia, I'm Rev. W. Martinez.
And I am the marvelous, magnificent, miraculous Mark Claire.
Read comics! Change the world!
Change the world!
Good night, America.
Adios.